This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 422, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you and TurboTax.
One, two,
Hey everybody, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 422, maybe brought to you by TurboTax, maybe not. My name is Paul Montgomery, and joining me, as always, Mr. Josh Flanagan.
Do you think if we just start saying sponsors' names that...
I don't think checks will just arrive, I don't think it works
know,
like
but that. Like you, maybe like a court thing, like Clorox.
Remember when we wanted to get Gold Bond to sponsor a show, yeah. And they're like, no.
We really tried that. I mean, like, we got, I think there was a call. I think Connor, got someone on the phone. Anyway.
I love us for that. And Connor's not here this week. He's off on holiday with Robert Redford, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. at some film festival. So we brought in a special guest, Mr. James Viscardi.
Hello.
Ooh.
Jim has a show called Let's Talk Comics. It's a little like our own Talk Explode, but slightly higher quality, and it comes out more than twice a year.
and you should be
listening to it. We're genuine fans of that show. So, James, welcome.
Thanks.
We are iFanboy, and we like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the best book that they read. Call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about it on this year's podcast, along with various other books and topics of interest and goofy nonsense. But before we get to the show, a quick reminder, warning, this is a review show, and we will be talking about the things that happen in this week's books. So if you're a little worried about the spoiler thing, don't worry. Just stop listening and come back later when you're ready. We'll be here.
Is that still a thing?
It is still a thing.
I'm going to go with Jim here. Is that a thing?
Spoilers?
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. I mean, about the comics, but it, like, you know,
people always worry. It's also worth noting that that Josh was a cheeky little pervert this week with his pick, and you might hear words like boner and punani. So, Josh, what did you select?
My pick of the week this week was Minimum Wage Number 2 by Bob Fingerman. Even that sounds dirty, and that's not. It's just a nice name. You may remember when the first issue came out, I sort of read it, and I was pleasantly surprised. It brought me back to an earlier time, I think, in my comics life, and I was reading this issue. Basically, it's if it's not Autobio, it's just like Autobio but fake. You know what I mean? It's one of those comics where it may as well be real, but I don't know.
Semi-autobio.
Yeah, I assume somebody out there knows, but I kind of like not knowing. I like thinking, well, this is real life. I don't know. It might be. So it's about this cartoonist. I think it's in the year 2000.
Is it?
It's not now.
I was going to ask you that because I was like, Is this in the 90s?
I think it's in 2000 or the early 2000s, and our hero has just of the book has just divorced at a very young age, and how he's out dating again. And like there's little like this is the beginning of internet dating, and there's like dial up, so it's not like the 90s when you wouldn't have even had any of that stuff. But it's
I guess
now,
that's right.
Where say broadband is ubiquitous, because this just made it sense. We've used the availability of broadband as a timestamp. Anyway, the point being, it's a very simple sort of comic story, and I feel like I used to read books like this all the time. And I don't anymore, because at some point, like people stopped making them with any sort of, regularity. Like this used to be a really sort of normal format for indie comics, is what I always thought of as indie comics when I was younger. And now you just don't see very much of it. And I always enjoyed this genre. It's sort of like the Chester Brown kind of comics or Box Office Poison, which is one of my favorite of all time. Again, that's not autobio, but there's a lot of truth in that stuff. There's a lot of real life going on there. There's no sci-fi element. It's not straight up comedy so much, but it's definitely, there's funny stuff, and it's just slice of life. It's a lot of dudes in their 20s living disproportionately in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And as I read through, I really like these kinds of comics, and I haven't been there. I haven't been there for a while. And on the surface, the book's kind of on the nose. There's a lot of sort of like clever dialogue, not clever, but like that sort of dialogue that sounds like it's supposed to be clever. Like if all your friends are around and they all had zingers all the time,
yeah.
And normally it kind of bugs me, but I'm just into it. The thing that makes this the pick of the week. It just the story is he met a girl last time. This time he starts to get physical with her, and it's there's something about these kind of comics too. They're sort of explicit, but sort of not. And there's a titillation about that that's always sort of exciting to read. But also just because it feels like real life. And so like he goes over to the girl's apartment, and she wants to shut the light off, and he's like, that's weird. I'm not really happy about the light being off. And you find out that she'd lost a lot of weight, and she has body issues, and then you find out she really likes pot, and then there's a problem with her dealer/ex-husband who's not really her ex-husband,
yeah.
It's just all that anxiety and hand-wringing that comes with not knowing how to handle any situation when you are 24 years old.
Yeah.
And you're out there, you're in the real world, and maybe there are people who totally are cool with it, but I still feel like that to this day when dealing with anything that's happening in life. And there's a truth in it. There's an honesty in it that I really like. And then the reason that it was the pick is at the end of the whole thing, I wanted to read what was going to happen next. I wanted to know. I was like, when can I get the third issue? Because that's the thing that I want.
When you say it, as in cool with it, what does that mean?
Cool with being comfortable in situations where there
just,
are other
just
people.
Just the world.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
I'm the same way, right here, right there with you, brother. Yeah. I didn't know if you meant like Sex in the Dark or
Well, listen, that part I don't remember being all that upset about.
It's
you
sort
want
of
the lights off. That's cool.
It feels a bit like a Seinfeld thing because it is. It's the reaction to a weird date and them sort of blathering about it afterwards. Like, are you okay with it in the dark? And like, I think guys are more visual, and we need to be able to see it. And the other guy's like, well, his friend who's also a comic artist. I don't know if we mentioned that the guy is an artist, right?
Cartoonist, yeah.
He's a cartoonist, and so this other guy that he's talking to is like, "What's the point if you can't see anything?" And which is, that's one perspective.
I find it to be like the displaying of id. I find to be very brave from a creative standpoint. I really like when I think about what if I wrote down all the thoughts that I had. What would people think of me? And that's when I get impressed by it, because I'm like, I'd get in a lot of trouble if I wrote all that stuff down. What would my mother say? And so I like that there are people who are and people who do that. And I haven't been reading enough of it lately.
I jumped in on this in the second issue.
You could follow along fine.
Yeah, I could follow along fine. There's also, I also like that in the beginning, the inside cover, it says previously on Minimum Wage, not previously in Minimum Wage, because it does feel kind of like a sitcom in that way. And it's actually, it felt like it took me back to when I sort of discovered Kevin Smith movies and like Chasing Amy, especially like just like guys almost, I don't want to say speaking eloquently, but trying to speak deeply about that the other guy makes a queef noise, as they say it, when he sees a girl that he's attracted to and he doesn't know that he's doing it. It's like a Pavlovian response. Yeah. And it's thinking analytically about very lowbrow things.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I also couldn't help but notice that the main guy looks kind of like you.
Okay.
You don't think so?
No, I can't argue with that. That was mm-hmm. that was tacit acceptance. All right, I can see that a little bit. I don't. My hair is not so out of control there.
It isn't. No, but I sort of. I don't know.
I saw that picture you posted this morning. It's close.
Your Boyd Crowder hair. I think I heard your voice in very inopportune moments while I was reading this book, and that made for an interesting experience for me. And
if that's what we shouldn't talk. Enjoy the book. That's fine too. I also really love the cover. It's sort of one of those Tijuana Bible sort of tribute covers. You know, he was naive, knee deep in a miasma of demon, weed, and carnality. And it's kind of faded and crackled, and it's like a fun treatment to it. It was good. It was, I dug it.
I think just even in a sea of fantasy, right? Or just like comics that have any form of suspension, you know, of disbelief.
Sci-fi, fantasy, supernatural.
Right. that this is really just like a welcome sort of breath of fresh air. Like it felt real enough that you were just like able to escape into the story, but at the same time be like identify with a number of different things. And it's not something that you necessarily can get, or essentially to an extent, in comics that are out there today, at a bigger publisher.
It used to be very common, I feel like, right. Or at least more widespread. And like, I don't know, like Top Shelf used to do stuff like this a lot, and they kind of got away from it. And now I don't see it as often. Mm-hmm. And I think so. There was that. Like you're right. Like. That was nice, but also there was a sense of like a kind of nostalgia to it. Like, oh, I love these kinds of comics, and I miss them. There are hundreds of them that were printed from 98 to 2005 probably.
And I love his personal little it's a small letter column in the back.
Yeah,
where he doesn't have a whole lot of feedback yet because he's just sort of started this up again after doing it previously. And I like that he's excited. This is his project. This is his thing that he works on. And he gets to, shout out to some of the books that he's enjoying right now. Mm-hmm. And that puts a real personal touch on it. This is sort of a mom and pop kind of thing to it that I like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And no, that's definitely a thing. And the cartooning is kind of solid. It all works.
It's really solid.
It gets across. I mean, the guy's a pro. He was doing this for a really long time.
Yeah. I love the blue tones and it just looks great.
Yeah, so it was it's sort of an offbeat pick of the week, but I was actually glad to do it because I think it's really good to right now. In the rest of comics, you've got this let's say punishing just sort of array of really really talented people doing really good superhero comics, but we are getting a lot of superhero comics. Over at Image, I guess it's a slightly different thing, but I feel like we're getting a lot of them. And all the ones that aren't are coming from Image. There's, there's no Vertigo anymore. There's no, well, there is.
All right, let me salvage the segue here. Punisher number one.
I wasn't supposed to be a segue. I just looked up. I was like, what's next?
Anyway. Just kept on going. All right, so Punisher number one, Nathan
so
Edmondson,
tired.
And Mitch. You get to say his last name because I know you like saying Garrett's. Yeah. On Frank Castle in L.A. The thing that when I finished this issue, it sort of felt like. It feels like Frank has always been in LA, or he should have been. It just seems right. It just seems like a good fit. And this didn't have the awkwardness of trying to squeeze your foot into a new shoe. This felt not tired, but comfortable. And I liked Frank's new look. I think Mitch is doing great stuff on this book and bringing the military tactics to it. And I love that. I love the diner scene. I love that Frank has a place. Mm-hmm. That he's got a spot that he goes to. He's got and he knows the regulars, and he still feels like he refers to himself as more of a coyote. He's still a loner, and yet you're able to do something with this expanded cast, like his military buddy who, you know, they meet out in the desert, sort of Breaking Bad style, and you know they swap stories and he gets more, you know, munitions and stuff for his cool little cache down in I don't know where that is, but it's a crazy little bunker he's got going on. He's prepped for war at all times. So feels like the Punisher to me. Feels like a really good fit. I was very impressed with this.
I loved this, sort of from top to bottom. I'm a Punisher fan, and I can't explain to you why I like the character. But there's something that is incredibly refreshing about this iteration of Frank that, like you said, just sort of feels right. I liked the slight bits of levity that you got throughout. Times where I just sort of chuckled to myself.
Yeah.
But even, as a total package, even the art, like there's that one panel of, I think, Frank blowing some guy's hand off with a shotgun. Mm-hmm. That was like, that's great. Where it just felt like, and, you know, it sort of throughout the entire book, it didn't feel as claustrophobic as I feel like a lot of Punisher stories tend to feel. I am super to read more of this one. I'm glad to have Frank.
I had a vague epiphany when I was reading this book. Those of you who've been listening for a long time may know that I'm not really such a big fan of the Punisher, just in general. So, and it seems like
more you're wrong.
It's fine. I feel like you'll find I won't argue any of my positions like that. You can try, but I'll be like, all right, whatever. What I've found, though, is that in the past, you know, 5 years or so, they keep putting people on the Punisher who is a character I don't like, who I really do like. So, like, previously there was Greg Rucka on the Punisher, and I was like, oh, come on. And then you've got Edmondson and Garrod's on this, and you know, I really like the activity. My complaint about it was always that it lacked a little bit of personality. At least
it never really knew who the people were in that.
Yeah,
book.
And that may have been on purpose. It's sort of a soldier thing. It's not even a complaint. It's just
a clinical cold precision doesn't really lend itself to warm, you know, character.
Which brings me to my slight epiphany is that in this. When you see Frank acting more warmly than we have seen him in a long time, certainly compared to what Rucka did. Rucka said, you know, Rucka's take was basically that he's a psychopath.
Yeah.
He's a killer. He's a machine. He's a serial killer is what he is. And he wrote him that way. There was very little. I didn't think he talked very much.
It's a force of nature, which is, I think, a completely valid take on the Punisher.
Now in this one, he was, you know, like there's a shot of him in the desert, like shaking a hand, and I was like, this is very odd. And my thought was, boy, this doesn't seem very much like the Punisher. And then I thought, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, why not? You know, it's one of those things. Like my first instinct is this doesn't seem like the right character. Then my second instinct was, why not do a different take on the character? That's why not? You know, it works for Batman. It works for the Punisher. Let's see other things that they can do with it. Like this one's, he's a little bit affable. He's got a little bit of a cocky edge. His rocket launcher thing, you know, where he's just toying with the guy. You know, it's a little more LA. It's a little laid back. His hair's slicked back, you know.
I like the hair.
It works. It's all good. I was also impressed by, you know, Mitch was actually known to a lot of people as a colorist first, even before he was doing his own art. And he colored, I thought somebody else colored this because it looks very different than the activity. The cartooning itself actually looks different than the activity. And the colors are a lot more flat and a lot less processed in this. And I thought it worked really well. I thought it was a nice, I thought it was just a nice simplification of what we were looking at.
Yeah, just going back to the character thing, I got to interview both of them about this, and that's something that they wanted to be really conscious about, that he can sort of turn it off and on. He puts on the skull shirt and he's the Punisher, but then there's also moments where he's Frank, where he's going to be able to turn on a dime if somebody comes into that diner behind him, but there is a very definite shift in his personality. And that's something cool to see, because we're so used to seeing him. I guess for the two of us, we see him more in cameo roles when he appears in other books, since we're not actively pursuing his solo title previously and before like Rucka came on. So I think what's going to be fun for us is seeing him, you know, sort of not necessarily out of costume, but when he's toggled it off. And he's just relaxing and at the diner and everything. And I like the subplot with the police lady who's maybe kind of into him. And that might not work out well. Yeah, and she's got here's this memento mori that you just told me is a sign of death.
Don't get too attached to her, Paul.
Yeah, I know. So I'm excited to see how that unfolds, because that's just going to be tragic as hell.
I gotta say, you know, like, because of the clinical nature of the activity, I was thinking, oh, it's gonna be more Punisher like that, and it was a really welcome surprise. Mm-hmm. that it was not what I expected. So that's very cool.
So which Punisher do you think this will end up being? Dolph Lundgren, or Ray Stevenson, or Thomas Jane?
I don't even know how to answer that. I've never seen Dolph Lundgren. Ray Stevenson, I was clawing at the walls like a cat on the way to the vet. Thomas Jane, it's probably most like Thomas Jane, because this is actually closest probably to Garth Ennis' Punisher. He had a little bit of a streak of sense of humor to him, I guess. It's not as sort of strange as Garth Ennis' mind is.
Maybe a little Kurt Russell in there? I don't know. Kurt Russell has never played Punisher, but
no, he's like 5'3". Kurt Russell, the only good thing Kurt Russell ever. No, I'm not gonna do that.
Do we ever see Frank's feet? Tombstone, but
do we see Frank's feet? Let's see. I bet we do. He's got, yeah. We see them.
He could be wearing platforms. That's right. Yeah, that's a great page.
You'll notice that that there's an alligator attack in this book, and then there's also an alligator attack in Black Widow 3, which is also a Nathan Edmondson book. There were alligators. There was an alligator shots in it.
Saying there's a fixation.
I'm saying that month he had alligators on the brain when he wrote this. In fact,
I wanted to talk about Batman Black and White number 6, another fine anthology issue. I thought this was a pretty nice collection of short stories, and some nice angles. What was interesting about this one, it was not so Batman centric. It focused a lot on the expanded cast, and I don't know if that was intentional from editorial to put all these stories together, or maybe it just worked out that way. Great Cliff Chang story. Cliff Chang art in black and white, really nice. There's a great Cliff Chang story. It's called Clay.
Is it the Cliff Chang who's like all super clean, or the one who's got a little rough edge that showed up in the Wonder Woman books?
Yes.
The latter?
Yes. See what I did there? Is yes to both of those. It's a little bit of...
Oh, I see. Two flavors.
Yeah.
It looks really nice in black and white. It's a Dick Grayson-centric Robin story. And I love the Clayface. And he plays to the theatrical nature of Clayface. There's like 7 different Clayfaces over the years. This is the classic one who's, an actor... And maybe sort of a failed actor, and a little bit of that Six Emperor Tyrannus kind of thing. But it's a great story about sort of Dick Grayson on one of his first field ops with Batman, and not being taken seriously by the Gotham PD. And I like that he reads their disdain through lip reading, because he's so far away. They think that he can't hear them, but he can see what they're saying, and he very much wants to prove himself. The other great story I thought was Ali Moss and Becky Cloonan doing a story about one of Bruce Wayne's, maybe not one night stands, but one of those girls we always see on his arms, out, you know, in like a montage, you know, outside of a theater opening, or, you know, when he's, you know, breaking a bottle of champagne over a yacht or something. And then we never see them again.
It's quite, the concept of it's quite sexist. There's just like, they're just female jewelry and we never think about them. And we, who are these? Are they ladies of the night? Anyway, I can see why.
Yeah, it's because it's all sort of I thought that was really and it were really interesting examination to say who are these girls, and because they're it's a very thankless role. They're it's all part of, you know, if you look at Batman as the real entity and Bruce Wayne being the alter ego, it's all part of his patter, all part of his showcase, and to keep suspicion away from him. And that's kind of creepy and sociopathic in a way.
It is.
And I love when we get that shot of, you know, she's saying that, you know, when we're out, he's like, he lights up and he's live. And then, but then when it's just us by ourselves, and you see this really creepy shot where he's like looking off in the distance and thinking about his parents' murder probably, and, you know, beating up criminals and crying out,
punch some guys right
now. I need to go punch some dudes. And yeah, it's I think it's a really important point of view to look at. It's part of the tragedy of Batman that there is this collateral damage, that these women at least find some kind of camaraderie with each other because they meet up afterwards and like, well, what was it like for you? And you know, and he bought out a whole opera audience and then he left in the middle of it. And I was too embarrassed to leave. And that's a really interesting character study, I thought.
Yeah, I just love that there's a group of them. Like, they all just sort of get together and talk about their dates with Bruce Wayne. Like,
yeah, it's almost like it's almost like the lunch table at school or something. Yeah. They all meet up.
Do they suspect? They must know something.
I don't know.
I will admit, at first I got super excited when I saw Ali Moss's name on the cover, thinking that he was going to be doing the artwork. But I'll take Becky Cloonan
any day. Yeah, that's not a bad trade off. So, least favorite story, probably the Adam Hughes one, which is kind of a flimsy premise that Catwoman pretends to be crippled so that Batman and Slam Bradley will both go out and seek justice for her. Meanwhile, she goes and robs Wayne Manor or something. And
to be fair, though, that took him 8 years to draw.
And it shows.
It did look good.
It did look really good. And I love him drawing Catwoman. He has quite a knack for that. And cool seeing Slam Bradley. I always like seeing Slam Bradley.
But yeah.
The story was like, I don't know about that. And then in retaliation for this group, apparently crippling Selina, Batman goes in and instead of killing people, because I don't do that, he cripples everybody in the room. And it turns out that she was fine. She could walk and it was just a trick. And then at the end, they go get ice cream.
What about the people that he crippled?
Yeah, what about the people that he crippled? That's what I'm thinking.
Still laying on that floor.
I was just like, I don't know how I feel about that story. So, but it did look pretty. So there you go.
What do we think about Action Comics 28?
I love it.
This is the best Superman that we've had in a very long time. And, and I am so happy about that.
What do you think, Josh?
I like the imagination of it. I like Superman's character in it very much. I'm not so into subterranean alien culture thing. That part I was kind of less than interested in. But okay. I really liked the twist at the end. I like the unintended consequences storyline that's kind of going on. I like that we've decided that those little creatures are good because they're cute till the sun hits them.
They're like gremlins, basically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Not the RAF gremlins, but the movie gremlins.
Yeah, I caught that. I never even think of the RAF for the people. Gremlins first.
I've used the RAF gremlins in things I've written, so yeah. I think about those.
Futterman was not wrong about that.
Yeah.
I just loved the Well, the back and forth, you know, just between Clark and Lana, I thought was just really great and playful throughout the whole thing. And God, man, can Aaron Cooter draw?
He's getting better and better each issue, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, he just does facial expressions super well.
Yeah.
Yeah. His facial expressions are really, I think, what really sold this for me.
Yeah.
That and, you know, that whole thing at the end where, like, this Superman still feels a little young, which I think it was, you know, which I like. So I want more.
This, I kind of like the subterranean thing and how alien it feels because it's different. It's something that I don't feel like I've seen, at least presented this way, in a Superman story before. And sometimes I fear that when I say, oh, this is great Superman, now that's the Superman that I want, it's, you know, like the origin story. I never get tired of hearing the origin story, seeing it, you know, depicted, not in Man of Steel, but, you know, in other things.
Well, you were okay with that up until a point. Maybe? No?
Okay. But no, I don't want it to be like the only Superman stories I like have all of the same elements. Like, it's always got to be Metropolis and, you know, and Jimmy and Perry and Lex and those relationships and, you know, that back and forth between him and Lois. So it's cool to have it be, you know, Lana, and it's a slightly different relationship. And I like that she's known about, you know, his superhuman nature for a very long time. That's an interesting thing to do, especially since he's a young Superman and he's just finding his footing.
I gotta think that this version of Superman is the most interesting. Just the awesome power, not really sure what you're doing, maybe a little too much confidence. I also like old Superman, who's sort of like, he knows better than everything and he knows what not to do. But it's really fun to play in the margins of the superhero, I guess, instead of just the most capable version of him. Because I think that's where people got in trouble. That's when it got a little boring.
Mm. I agree with Jim. I like this, the back and forth between two. It's like that. What you know, Jeff Loeb established with the Superman Batman book and it's usually Superman and Batman, and you get the caption boxes. Here it works really well for these two who have known each other for, you know, practically their whole lives, and there's a great, you know, flirtation between the two.
Is there a Lois at this era in Superman, or like one?
Yeah,
is that a thing though? She's a lady that he works with.
I don't know.
I can't remember at what point they sort of like when do we meet?
Well,
I don't know.
She had a boyfriend, right?
In this 2 years plus of the 52, we've been through a lot of different Superman times, so it's a little hard to keep track.
She does have the boyfriend, and I know that was playing out in Action Comics, which I don't read. Or excuse me, Superman, which I don't read, but and I'm excited for Geoff Johns to come back for that.
This is prior to the Superman Wonder Woman. This is not Clark Catropolis Superman.
Right.
But is this the 5-year gap? Or is this maybe 4 years?
I gotta be honest, I'm not super knowledgeable on the New 52 timeline.
I don't need to know, but don't
really want to be. This is what I like, this one, and I enjoy, you know, Superman Unchained as well, and I'm looking forward to the Superman book with Geoff Johns coming back, just because that was a sweet spot for me in terms of.
I haven't heard of that until you just said it now.
Yeah, he's.
Oh yeah, him and John Romita Jr.
John Romita Jr. That's right.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was just wondering what happened to him after Captain America. Oh my God, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's going to be fun. So it's things are looking up. Things were very bleak for Superman fans for a while, and now things are doing okay. We're getting there.
Do we still need to let that sit in for you, Josh?
No, that's cool. That's very exciting.
It's very fun.
Like, you know, EDC. You know, that could have been just some dude. Oh, cool, Brett Booth. All right.
So let's talk about a bunch of.
I'm sorry, Brett Booth. But I wouldn't have been excited about it had he been buying the book. That's all I'm saying.
I just need to ask one question.
Okay.
Does Ambush Bug get news 3 months prior to everything? Because that Channel 52 thing, like, I feel like we've been talking about that forever now. Well, it's just a shot of Superman, Wonder Woman kissing, and I'm like, oh, okay.
This is a real question. Has this changed? Because I don't read it. I just see it at the end of every book. Did they change it?
I think there have been at least three different stories that they tell, but yeah, it always looks the same, and I really just thought,
boy, they've been advertising whatever this is for months.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I literally haven't read a single word.
So why are you using page real estate for this? But anyways, a bunch of number one issues came out from Marvel this week. So in addition to Punisher number one, Ms. Marvel number one by G. Willow Wilson, Adrian Alfano. When was the last time we saw Adrian Alfano art?
Uncanny X-Force. But
Uncanny X-Force?
I don't think we want to talk
really?
About that.
Okay. Which is a weird fit. This is a great fit.
Did you do Uncanny X-Force after Remender left?
He did it with Sam Humphries.
Oh.
I think he literally just a couple issues ago.
Oh, okay.
Looks way different than this book.
But before then, it was a long time, you know.
Yes.
Loved him on Runaways. And then where did this guy go? So this was, I thought, delightful. I really like that this is here, and handled very well, I thought.
So you enjoyed it? Because
yeah.
I have not read anything by G. Willow Wilson that I enjoyed. I remember she did one of the not good issues of Superman. I remember trying to read her Vertigo series once.
The Air book, yeah.
Yeah, and not understanding it at all.
Now, I don't know if this is for you, but I know...
I didn't read it, so...
Yeah, I know that I liked it quite a bit, and it's... You know, so this is the Pakistani-American Muslim character who is... her powers are awakened by the... What's it called? The Terrigen Mist?
Terrigenesis.
And so she's a secret... Kree, right?
Inhuman,
right?
Yep.
They're vaguely related to the Kree.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, but anyways, she it's about living in between cultures. You know, like and I like that it's not even that her parents are very strict or anything like that. It's that. I like that her older brother is more devout in that way. And so he thinks all jobs are sort of beneath him. He doesn't want to be like his dad who works in usury. His dad's is a banker, I guess. And he thinks that's not a good profession for a Muslim to have. And so he just kind of sits around the house praying all day. And the dad makes fun of that and says, you know, that you should be doing something, not just praying to get away from action, from doing something with your life. And it was just, I liked seeing into a world that I know very little about.
I tell you something, this looks fantastic.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Really nice art. I love the way that the dad is drawn.
Yeah,
all the characters have a little sort of cartoony look to them. I think it's really cool. If Runaways had looked like this, it would have never sold. Sorry,
No, it looks. I don't. I was trying to think of what it looks like. It looks like it could be like on a greeting card or a children's book.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's not. You know, it's not mainstream comics, but I think Marvel's also redefining what that is, because we're saying that about more and more of their books, that they don't look like a mainstream book.
Yeah,
and that's pretty cool. So I like this Kamala character, and she looks up to Captain Marvel now, and she's basically going to take her place. Some really nice dream sequences. She writes fan fiction about superheroes, and I like the earnestness of the character. Well, and that's a great panacea for did I pronounce that word right?
Yeah, that was good.
Damn it!
Why are you worried about pronunciation at this point?
I don't know, but I was
I've always found your elocution to be pretty spot on, dude.
Every once in a while, I say something really messed up. So, anyways, I like the panacea to the grim and grittiness. It's not a cynical superhero. It's very hopeful, and I look forward to the rest of her journey.
All seven issues. That's all.
But you just killed it.
Well, yeah, that's my fault. I've heard that. That's been said to me before. If you say they're going to get canceled, then it will fall. No, it's not. It's not how that's going to work. But you know. I would like to see the trend of these kind of things not being successful change, but I can't see how they would when the audience is largely the same, as far as I understand. But hey, maybe I'll be surprised. You know what there needs to be? There needs to be some sort of controversy where they report about this on the news that it offended somebody. Then you got your sales, buddy. You know, because people are.
I think that's happened already.
Did it? Yeah, but it happened because of the solicitation cycle. People forgot about it before the book ever came out.
Yep. Let's see. If you'd like to buy, what should we have people buy?
Trampolines
or gumball machines. Head on over to ifanboy.com/Amazon. We get a little piece of that. Wonderful.
Want to know a thing about trampolines that I didn't know?
What's it?
Dangerous?
Buy one, and apparently, a lot of homeowners insurance won't let you have them because of their potential to kill children. And if you get one anyway, and then like somebody from the insurance agency sees it, then your insurance on your home will be canceled.
Does it matter if you have the fence thing around it?
I don't. It depends on the policy, because we bought one. And then found that out, and was just like, "Should we just put it together?" And I was like, "No, just take it back."
Does that fence thing really save any lives?
I don't think so. I think it just contains the carnage.
Well, we'll never know, right? I mean, we'll never know if it actually is saved.
Well, if you have the
lives.
Right kind of, yeah. Well, the trampoline people are all very hush hush about this.
I just like the idea that there's a guy, you know, working for your insurance company who goes out, you know, in his Windstar, and he's got a clipboard, and he's watching you with the binoculars.
The bounce adjuster.
I'm gonna drive by the Flanagan household and just see. They put that trampoline up.
If they're just laying their laundry over it, fine, that's okay. But if they're actually using it, oh, he looks like he's having fun.
This is Dawson. We got a potential tigger. We got a potential tigger.
So if you want to get one of those,
if blocking you and your neighbors, that you could just put it in your neighbor's yard.
I guess I could do that. I feel like that could backfire.
I think I saw a YouTube video where a moose wanders into a yard and stumbles onto a trampoline.
I want to see that.
And just horrible things. And it wasn't as fun. I remember it not being as funny as I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
But
there's all sorts of reasons for that, I guess.
but anyway, head on over to ifanboy.com/Amazon. Buy all your stuff there. We get some love. Or if you want to give us some love a different way, ifanboy.com/registration. You can subscribe to that for $3 a month or $30 a year. Helps us. It keeps us in light bulbs is what I'm saying. So there you go. There's your public service announcement for the episode.
There you go. That's good work.
I always love when I get that assignment.
Did you
oh, great! It's my
part?
Turn. Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
The registration thing. Yeah,
that's fine. I was trying to figure out. I've completely. Here's something that people at home might not know. Connor. Connor usually keeps track of time.
Yes.
And then I just realized, I don't know. We're gonna. I don't know how long we've been doing this. So
let's roll with it.
What is Avengers AI? Because I don't know. Number 9. Jim, this
it's
is
a robot Avengers. I know. It's robot Avengers.
Is that really all it is?
It's really all it is.
If they called it robot Avengers, I might have checked it out sooner.
Yeah, why don't they call it robot Avengers?
It seems like a slam dunk.
This one is also part of a crossover with the Uncanny Avengers. So you've got some Rogue in there, and Captain America.
I mean, a crossover in a sense that they show up.
Yeah.
But
That's a crossover. Yeah, I mean, right?
Look at the Marvel employee getting it. Former Marvel employee getting all technical. That was such a bullshit editor answer. Well, listen, they show
crossover
up.
In as much as they show up.
That was the sound of a man who's been asked one too many questions by CBR that he didn't want to deal with. Sorry, carry on.
This is Sam Humphries and Andrea Rao, and
not only does this book look great, but there is a moment in the book where all the Avengers get together and build a Megazord.
Megazoid.
And it was fantastic.
It was pretty good. This is probably not the best issue to jump in on.
No.
Have you been reading this too?
Yeah.
Why don't I know about it?
It's great.
It's really good looking.
Yeah, he's got this Mobius thing, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, and it's pretty colorful. This one takes place in like a virtual world. So on top of it being like robot Avengers, it's also like reboot Avengers.
Right. Well, so like the whole premise of it is essentially that, you know, it's you should be afraid that your phone is out to destroy you, right? Like, yeah. If there was like that, you should be afraid of that. And
this is the fallout of Age of Ultron, with the virus that Hank Pym used to kill Ultron, Demetrios taking on his own sentience, and he takes over an Iron Man armor, basically.
Yeah. Well, and it's just that, and so essentially, like, the diamond is a world where all AI live, right? And so there's good AI, bad AI, and hilarity ensues. Yeah.
It's like Tron. That's what it's like.
All right.
And it's very fun and entertaining.
Robot Avengers.
Superior Foes of Spider-Man, number 8.
Now, I'm curious what the hell else it is you had to say about this that we hadn't previously said.
Thanks, Obama. Did you read this one?
Yeah, I did. Of course I did. I love this series.
It's great. No, I just I wanted to talk about it because it continues to be wonderful, and I like that even though, you know, Superior Spider-Man, that chapter is ending, the Superior Foes of Spider-Man continue on, and I hope that the book lasts forever and ever and ever. And I'm wondering if Josh, if for you, since I think you and Connor are sort of waning on Hawkeye of late, mm-hmm. If this sort of fills that void for you.
Well, Hawkeye was my favorite character, so when you get a really good issue about him,
yeah,
that has a little something extra special. I like the line that is being walked with Boomerang a lot, where he doesn't, it's almost like he doesn't want to be a bad guy. He's definitely not a good guy, but he's not really, he's just constantly trying to convince himself that he's not that bad and what he's doing is fine. It's not, but it's not really like the evil, you know, fist in the air villain. I find really fun. And the discussion with the girl and her sort of, you know, amorphous morality.
It's kind of a turn on that you'd be a superhero. I knew that there were superheroes in New York, so that's kind of, but you'd never think you're going to run into one. And then, but what if I told you I was a super villain? And it's like, well, it's not exactly a turn off.
You know what it is? It's a better version of Kirkman's Ant-Man, his Eric O'Grady character.
Okay.
It's a better written, it's the same idea, kind of, but it's just better, it's done better. Although in that, he was trying to be a superhero, but he kind of wasn't, he was a jerk.
It needs that, what was it, Silver Fox, Black Fox?
I don't remember.
What do they play, Wii together?
The cat burglar guy.
Yeah.
The old man Catwoman.
Yeah. Oh, it needs some of that. This has a bouncing head. Who wants pizza? There's so many just like grit, like, and also that it kind of crystallized in this. When you're talking about whether he wants to be a good guy or a bad guy, this whole thing is like, it's, you know, he's having Sopranos, like Tony Soprano style dream sequences.
I was in the middle of that and they called it out.
Yeah.
It was a dream sequence. And then he said he hates dream sequences. And I was like, I do too. Dream sequences are the worst. I was like, they are.
And doesn't that sound like it would be obnoxious, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's, I think I'm with him on all these jokes. I love it.
I mean, I think that Nick Spencer.
Do you also love Katherine Heigl?
I thought that was a Katherine Heigl joke. Because there needed more of those in Marvel comics. I guess not.
I think he's almost like out Joss Whedon on the banality of evil thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the banality of Katherine Heigl is kind of fun too.
Yeah. I think Steve Lieber makes it work a lot.
Oh yeah. Well, I know there were a lot of early comparisons to this book saying like, oh, it's like Hawkeye. But in a way, I think this really.
It's much more straightforward.
It's straightforward. It's also, I mean, it's a lot funnier. Just feel like even down to the point of like Shocker living in a rent controlled apartment. Like, of course. Why? Where else would Shocker live?
I keep thinking about that previous issue where Mach 7 comes in as Fred's Boomerang's parole officer, and then he tries to make a dramatic exit out the window, but he can't fit. And it's just like, and he indulges that for like three or four panels. And I love that they do that. I don't think other books allow themselves to be that silly.
Yeah.
This is about, it just feels like I'm on the exact right wavelength for the comedy in this book. Whereas a lot of comedy books, like, that's funny, but like this one, you really dialed into something on this one. And I hope it lasts forever and ever and ever.
Moving on to Forever Evil. Number 5, which isn't this over?
My fault again.
Yeah,
it's close. It's close.
This was the. I'm not paying attention to a lot of things. This was the spinoff of the Villains Month, right?
Basically. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about
it? It's gotten to a place where, like, just in light of all the Lex Luthor news that's been going on, you know, surrounding the movie and whatnot. Mm-hmm. That this is, you know, and Lex Luthor, I guess, heading up or joining the Justice League when this is all over. I like when Geoff Johns writes Lex Luthor, and so I wanted to. I've been reading this only to see if I'm going to still read Justice League when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually I know this book has been delayed quite a bit, but. Or not quite a bit, but this is probably the most consistent Finch art we've gotten in a bit as well. And it feels like there are stakes in this book that I feel like, you know, we haven't really found in Event Comics sort of in general in a bit. So I'm excited to see how it ends.
So does he deliver on the Lex Luthor here?
He does, and I you know, I want to see, we're on the cusp of a Lex sort of shining moment. That is what I want to see. That is what I
interesting. I do like the portrayal of Lex from time to time as sort of the dark alternative to Superman. Like, almost if Superman had never landed. You know, if Superman had never gotten here, Lex might be a champion in some way. That he's not necessarily evil, or that some of his evil is based solely out of jealousy towards Superman, and that jealousy sort of corrupted him in a way. I think that's an interesting interpretation. So to pose him as, if not a hero, some kind of anti-hero, you can do interesting things with that.
Yeah. Well, I think it was like, even in a way, back when Paul Cornell was writing Lex, right? Like, this feels the most like that, in a way that it just isn't. You never feel like Lex is too smart. Like, I feel like you can like write him in a way that he knows sort of every outcome, just sort of in like a Sherlock Holmes kind of way. And like he's still. You get the feeling that Lex isn't super sure it's all going to work out, but he's pretty sure. And, you know, it works.
Well, all right then. Speaking of Paul Cornell, Wolverine, this is his second Wolverine number one.
Yeah.
He's relaunched with Ryan Stegman on art. I think I like this a lot. I could be convinced to like it a lot. I actually missed the Unkillable arc, but I figured it out. I get the gist. Wolverine no longer has his healing factor, so now he has to wear armor, and he is he's subject to injury. And there's a big cliffhanger at the end, and oh my god, did he do that? I don't know. I don't really care. The thing that I liked the best about this was three panels on a page when somebody asked him about how you have a future and that you're a mortal.
Yeah.
And he thinks about he's three panels. One, like, he's grabbing a baby's hand. Two, he's in a tux having a drink with Scott Summers at the back of some party. And three, he's being roasted as an old man while people take pictures with their cell phones. Or maybe he's at a convention. I don't know.
We should say, like, celebrity roast, not, like, on the gridiron, because this is an X-Men book, so
that's a good point.
Should probably...
I loved those three panels.
Clarify. Those were that was the high point for me, too.
That's all.
This is one of, you know, it's one of those things. It was when I heard Paul Cornell Wolverine, I was like, that's a real head-scratcher. I love Paul Cornell.
Sure.
I never in a million years would have paired him with Wolverine. That's what makes this really interesting.
Yeah.
Definitely
a different take on him. But it's not really, actually.
And then take away the healing factor. Take away one of the... I mean, the claws are sort of like... That's like the number one thing you associate with Wolverine. And then take away the healing factor. And that's so much of who he is. And so much of how he operates in the field is knowing that he can walk away from anything. So I think that's a smart choice. It'll be cool to watch.
Yeah.
Some really, really good-looking Ryan Stegman art, too.
Yeah, it's kind of. It looks like it's the place that he was meant to be. He's quite muscular, this Logan. Even without the healing factor, he works out.
He does. He does a nice gnarly looking Logan with the crazy hair and this big scar on his face. Yep. It's really good. Yeah.
He's kind of.
So is that just bedhead for Wolverine, or does he do it like
that? I think he watches Justified. He's a big Boyd Crowder fan.
I think this is more. There's a touch of early Ultimate Spider-Man hair. At a certain point in this, there's one after he takes the hood off. It's got a little of that Peter Parker thing. There's a touch of that. Anyway.
James, let's talk about Turok Dinosaur Hunter number one. Who put this out?
Who did? Dynamite.
Dynamite, okay.
Yep, Dynamite put this out. And this was... I came into Turok through... my Nintendo 64,
of course,
and as a kid who liked dinosaurs and my Nintendo 64, I naturally fell in love with the character of Turok. I'm coming into this from outside of playing that and the most recent game that they did. I know nothing about this character. I didn't read any of the Valiant stuff, none of it,
mm-hmm.
And I think Greg Pak nailed the first issue in just sort of setting up who this character is, why does he do what he does, and there's dinosaurs in it. So that's all you really need to get me into a comic.
I didn't know this was Greg Pak. That's okay. I might have to go check this out.
Yep.
I gotta confess, though. I avoided... Well, I don't know about lame. This is not going to surprise anyone who's listened to the show. I avoided the Turok game on the Nintendo 64 because I liked dinosaurs and I didn't like the idea of dinosaurs getting hurt.
Well,
they're evil.
That
dinosaurs.
Was the kid I was.
They're trying to kill you.
And continue to be. I know, but I just... I'd probably
You're
just
trying
let
to
them
food off
me.
His table?
I know. I know.
How about Turok's rights?
Well, it also should be said, I really liked... the artist on this book is Mirko Kolak, and he's the guy who did Red Skull Incarnate with Greg Pak.
Oh,
awesome.
And yeah, so it really just all comes together, and it's a great package, and I encourage everyone to go try it because it's...
That's a pretty good selling point.
Yep.
Everything you just said was good stuff. That's cool.
Does he make use of all of the dinosaur parts and... I mean, does he eat everything and then use the rest for shelter? Don't answer that.
Now you don't care about the dinosaurs?
He's taking...
If they're going to die,
You're taking a more Native American stance.
I'm trying to, yeah. I'm 0.0087% Cherokee, so I...
wants to make
sure. So it's okay.
That the dinosaur gods are not disrespected, and that every part of the dinosaur is utilized to the best of the ability of said hunter. Would you like some of my dinosaur bone trinkets?
So we got some news that excited Joshua.
Did it?
Because he's always wanted his love for Preacher to be validated by it getting its own live-action television series. So we found out that that Seth Rogen, who Josh has been compared to by some minor celebrities and character actors, has sealed the deal with AMC to bring Preacher to television with the other guy.
Evan Goldberg,
right.
Or Jonah Hill, as I will always picture him in my head.
Even though he's a different person.
Yep.
And also Sam Catlin of Breaking Bad is also involved. He's going to be the showrunner, actually.
Yeah. Well, those guys are, well, really famous and rich, basically. That's...
mm-hmm.
All right, you've got this.
I'm sorry, I would also say Steve Dillon and Garth Ennis apparently also involved creatively. They put out a statement that, you know, they've been working on this, like, in talks with them, and they at least they said they appreciate that the guys seem to understand Preacher and have a pretty good take on it. Aside from all that news, we should also say that Seth Rogen, no plans to be actually to appear in it in any role at this time.
Now, those of you who have been following, Preacher is my favorite thing. Period. Not just favorite comic series. Like it's
the house was on fire. Save the Preacher collection. Yeah. Push the wife out of the way.
What's funny is that I've actually been rereading it. Like I started last week.
Yeah.
And then this came out like in the middle of I'm in the middle of the third trade. I'm like, what the? How did they know? I don't know. I'm contrary in the form of, like, I don't really need my comics to be made into movies and TV. At this point, the novelty of it has certainly worn off. And you either get something that isn't the same thing, or you get something that's exactly the same thing, like with Watchmen, which is almost worse. It is worse. And I love the thing, and I don't want a different voice in my head, I think. I don't want a different view of what it is I'm looking at.
So you're not going to watch it.
No,
you're just...
like, it's never going to live up to the thing that I love. Uh-huh. So at best, it's an accessory. But to most people, you know, if it's successful, which is a huge if, that's gonna color what the thing is, and it's totally me being like, it doesn't matter. It's not gonna change my books. I can still have it. But one thing that really did put me over the edge is that hearing that DC doesn't even have the rights anymore. It's reverted to Ennis and Dillon, and so they are benefiting from it fully and directly. And they're involved, and I think that that's awesome.
That's cool.
Good for them.
Because it's been a really long time, and I think that they, after all the stupid rumors, and I've interviewed Garth Ennis in the past, probably more than once, to be like, so any, and I asked the dumb question that everybody, was there any news on the movie, you know, and it was always just like, he was like, I don't know, it's not,
yeah.
It's not really in my hands, I can't say.
So, okay, so silver linings then are that they benefit in some way. They do have some kind of creative involvement, mm-hmm. even if they're not going to be, you know, like scripting the show or anything like that. I think it's good that it's, if you're going to do it, it's a TV show and not a movie.
I think that that's totally a great way to go. I really think it's cool now, even just a few years later. I used to say, well, you can only really do it as an HBO show. And at one point that was true, and now it is not true. And now there are other options. I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It could be neat, I guess.
If anything, it'll bring more people to the book.
Yeah, I mean, it could be.
And then they can enjoy it now.
Josh doesn't need more people for the book.
Josh doesn't want to share.
Yeah, if it's just going to enable Vertigo to do more books that aren't as good as old Vertigo books, then I guess that's probably not good. But
I read all of Preacher. I came to it late. I guess I read it at some point in 2012. In one weekend.
Jesus Christ.
It was a little crazy. Yeah. I had borrowed all the trades from a friend and they had been sitting there for a while, and I was just intimidated by it. And then one weekend I was like, I'm just going to read all of it.
Well, the thing is, that kind of momentum is only sustained if you really like something.
It was really good. It is, I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know if I'd push, you know, Josh's lovely wife into the flames to save it. I do love it. I think it's my favorite, you know, self-contained comic book thing. Yeah. I don't know if I even expected that when I said I'm going to sit here and read this, but by the time I got to the end, wow, just an emotional,
yeah,
okay, you know, ride. And
so where do you stand on the preacher spectrum?
It's tough for me because I actually just read it for the first time 3 months ago.
Really?
And
oh wow.
Well, good. You beat the. You're cool. You're still in.
Yeah. Yeah. I will admit because I got into comics period very late, and so it felt a little old to me at first. But once I kept reading it and I made my way all the way through it. I liked it. It's not my favorite thing. But I am actually interested to see how it translates.
On the show. I'm sorry about the connection.
I'm actually very interested to see how it translates, to a TV show.
I think in terms of tone and direction, I think a lot of that is on the page.
Yeah.
It's going to be fairly, you know, it's going to be fairly easy to transfer that, I think, in much the way that they did.
There's such strong characters and relationships.
But there's your problem. Not your problem, but there's your challenge. Right. Is whoever they get to play Jesse, to a slightly lesser extent Cassidy, I think they can find a tulip easily enough. But that thing is going to, and people are going to say, you know, everybody's going to have their ideas. I've looked at pictures of Walton Goggins, and he looks exactly like the Glenn Fabry covers. But Jesse Custer's not that old in this book.
I don't care.
Really? I mean, but like Goggins has got to be pushing 40-something, and that's a different kind of person than the Jesse Custer in this story.
They could paint in some of his forehead. Put like some green tape over, you know, his hairline. Bring it, you know.
But I don't know who.
The interesting thing we'll see, like if it does take sort of a page out of what they did with The Walking Dead and diverge a little bit.
That's interesting.
Like, will they go in that way? And is it something that, you know, is the first set of episodes, is that going to be something fairly literal in terms of a translation, or are they going to take liberties, and are they going to see if they can modernize it a bit? And if they do, does that work? Like, it'll be interesting to see how it all comes together.
One of the things that I like, that I like the era that it's in, because it's just before, like, there's mentions of the internet in it, and there's cell phones exist, but none of that's really like a thing. It's a little slightly more timeless than that, but I still think it's a pretty timeless story. I wonder what they're going to do in terms of content.
Mm-hmm.
In that, some of it's pretty out there. Like, are you going to be able to do the Jesus Assad's party to that extent? Are you going to have the fuckable meat man? Are you going to have, you know, that'll all be really interesting. And you know, there's humor to it. And then there's other bits of it that kind of really work well because they're in a comic book. Because some of it, if you saw it or heard it out loud, it's difficult to take. And then some of the not politically correct stuff in it, which I don't think is the creators being insensitive, but some of it I was like, wow, that's pretty ballsy.
Yeah, I just remember. I just remember seeing Superbad and thinking Saint of Killers.
I could see Saint of Killers being cut. It's wrong.
You have Christopher Mintz Plotz playing Saint of Killers.
He'd be Arsface.
Be Arsface? Yeah.
That's what I want to see. I want to see that on TV.
You want to see Arsface on TV?
That, like, getting away with putting that on screen, I think, is pretty ballsy. Because, I mean, I can just see the petitions and protest letters already. It's pretty, and I can't entirely disagree with them. I'm like, that's true. That is kind of rude, but it's also very funny.
I don't remember what the conversation was like before, you know, The Walking Dead went on AMC, but I'm sure there were people, you know, very worried about how dire is this going to look. Yeah. And they've gone to some pretty dark, pretty gnarly places and done some very impressive things with prosthetics on a weekly show, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I don't know. I'll be interested to see it. I you know, like, it's either going to be I'm going to love it and it's going to be great, or I'm going to be like, "Eh, it's fine." Like, if there's not, which is kind of how I am with TV.
I'll give you this. If there was ever a time to put it on TV, yeah, I think now's a pretty good time.
Yeah. I agree.
It's a really good climate for it. It's I think all the pieces are in place. AMC is at the right point that they could do it.
I heard they're going to bring in Christian Bale to do the voice. When he does the Word of God, just get like
that, that
kind of thing. That how tough is that going to be to nail? It's all that stuff.
I think they're going to diverge a bit, but yeah, keep those characters, and I'll be interested.
Yeah, they're great characters. It's a classic sort of American Western. Mm-hmm. It's really what it is. I always say. Oh man.
So this is normally the place on the show where we do some audience feedback, but we're running a little long.
We're running really
long. So save that stuff for next time. But if you have any questions for us, send those along to contact@ifanboy.com. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 326-2697. And don't forget, send us in some relationship emails. Maybe we'll talk about them on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be Valentine's Day for us. It'll be after it. But that's fine. There's still room for loving after Valentine's Day.
Well, yeah. Well,
you might need some loving after Valentine's Day, depending on how you screw it up.
That's the big problem. You go out for the big dinner, and then you're like, ugh, maybe not love it. Maybe nap time. Maybe Zantac. I don't know.
So we've done some other shows lately. We just did a special edition podcast with Connor and Ryan were also on it, on Justice League War, which is an animated feature from DC Entertainment. And we were quite surprised at how much we enjoyed it, given our feelings about the new 52. So it's worth a rental. But check out the podcast and see why we liked it and maybe why you'll like it. You can also listen to me if you like these dulcet tones over on the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast. Look for that in iTunes or at fuzzytypewriter.com. Lately, we've been talking about True Detective and Justified. We're doing week-to-week commentaries on those new shows. So check those out.
That's
Josh, you'll like True Detective, I think, when you get to it.
I've seen the first episode.
Oh, okay.
I just haven't gotten to any more of it. But if you want to be haggard, smoking Matthew McConaughey, just giving me that look, that's cool.
Uh-huh.
That's totally cool, too. I've learned, by the way, that my wife does not appreciate when I do the Matthew McConaughey Wolf of Wall Street chest thump song at a restaurant. But doesn't mean I'm not going to do it, is what I'm saying. So let's talk comics. See what I did there?
Jim, you
started a podcast and you said, "Hey, I'm going to do a podcast," and I was like, "Good luck with that." And then you did it, and it's pretty good.
Well, thanks.
Tell the people listening about the show, because, quite honestly, if you're looking for the kinds of interviews that that maybe we would do less frequently than we liked here in the past, and you were wanting more of that, I think Jim's show is a very natural place for you to go to get that.
Yeah. So let's talk comics. It's a long show. I'm not gonna.
Is it Sundress
so I'm just
long?
Gonna. No, they're not Sundress long. I call up comic creators and I say, "Hey, let's talk about your career."
You just cold call them?
Just cold call them.
Just like late at night.
we just go down memory lane.
John
There's Cassidy, a lot of...
This is the phone for you. Talk to me now. You call and you do a bad John McLaughlin, right? That's how that works. Next issue, literally. Sorry.
There's a lot of great information for folks who are looking to break into comics. If you want to see how your favorite creators did it, listen, they'll tell you.
It's all the secrets.
It's all of the secrets. Well, it's just funny. It's one of the things that I've been realizing and finding out is that if you want to break into comics, just start making them. Like there you go. That's how you do it.
And I would add to that, expect to suck at it for a little while.
Yeah. I've had some pretty nice guests in the past, and coming up, I've got Mitch Gerrits, Jerome Pena, Dan Slott.
That's the way to say his name, because now I'm starting to worry about it.
No, I think that's it, because it was a thing before I even started talking to him. I was like, how do you say it? It's Mitch Gerrits. Did I say Gerrits?
Yeah, you said Gerrits. One time,
yeah, it's Gerrits.
We interviewed Jeff Parker on camera, and he got it wrong. And then I heard about it later, and that's why I think I thought I knew. But now I feel like that was so long ago that I don't know. Yeah, this is a lot less interesting than the kind of stuff that you'll get on your podcast, as far as I understand. What I'm saying right now,
and also there's this weird thing where me and Jim interview the same people at the same time. I interview them for CBR Sunday Conversation. Like, you just did a Declan Chalvey interview, right?
Yep.
I've got one of those coming up next week. So, but I talk about ridiculous things. You talk about useful things.
You beat me to the coal story, though.
Uh-huh.
That was a good
Declan
one.
Declan Chalvey started in coal.
Yep.
I was a bad interviewer because I didn't follow up on that. Door-to-door delivering coal. That's what you got to do.
So you should check that podcast out.
You should check that out. It is very good.
Oh, yeah. It's at letstalkcomics.com and on, social media and whatever.
Intuitive.
It's easy enough to find if you know those words.
Yep.
And your little logo looks like a angry flower with Declan's face in the middle of it. At least on that episode.
That's what I was going.
Yeah. Anyway, head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show and the other stuff that's happening. There's all the other podcasts are there. There's little discussions and whatnot. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/ifanboy or Facebook at facebook.com/ifanboy. Like Paul said earlier, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 88fanboys, which is 326-2697. And honestly, if you've been thinking lately about sending in an email or a question or thinking, oh, I don't know what to ask, or they probably got a bunch of other stuff that they've already gonna list, not so much. We could afford to. If you've been thinking about sending something in, now's not a bad time. But also, really get in some of those relationship questions. Think of something and send us in something good, because it's fun.
And it's not that there are no dumb questions. It's just that we want them.
Yeah, yeah.
We want those. All right. So if you dig this sort of thing, you can write us a review in iTunes. Help people find the show. Better yet, tell all your friends about it. I already did the thing. Put it on a USB dongle thing. Put it in a Pepsi bottle. Toss it out into the ocean, and an octopus will go live in it. I saw this thing on a documentary. An octopus can go inside anything that it can fit its beak into. As long as the beak fits, everything else will go in there. And so, an octopus can live in a Pepsi bottle.
I totally forgot octopi had beaks.
Yeah, they have a beak.
That's the part that makes them terrifying.
Yeah.
Before that, they're just globulous and kind of weird, but the beak makes them terrifying.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I'm going to get an email from Ryan about that. It said something wrong.
He's off somewhere, the Galapagos or somewhere. He can't.
Not exactly, but yeah. Anyways, that's it for this episode.
Josh, you're incredibly ignorant.
I'm Paul.
I'm Jim.
I'm still incredibly ignorant. I'm not a cop to it. What was meant to say? What was meant to say? What was meant to say?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.